The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Nice, Magic Mac.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
This is a ForceCast special report.
This is so wizarding.
Hey, ForceCast fans. Jimmy Mac here with you, and we got a special report from Wizard World Chicago 2007. Each year, Star Wars comic book and pop culture fans invade the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center near Chicago's O'Hare Airport for Wizard World. And this year was no exception. Star Wars actors, artists, and fans were in abundance on the convention floor. And our first stop was to the Autograph Alley, where we talked to Dark Horse's model for Quinlan Vos, Doug Wangler.
How did you get the job as the model of Jedi Quinlan Vos?
It was just luck. Or maybe genetics, I don't know.
Well, there's no question there's a striking resemblance. How did you get into the heads at Dark Horse?
A modeling portfolio that Jan got to take a look at, one of my photos that somebody had sent to her, and she saw the resemblance, you know, and she immediately contacted me and was interested in bringing me here to Wizard World, and that was the first time I ever got to do anything like this, you know.
Jan Dursma.
Yeah, Jan Dursma.
So you hooked up with Jan, and she started drawing some incredible likenesses of you as Quinlan Vos.
She had already developed this character. It was, I forget what series, there was several, like Jedi, and then I started modeling for her during the Republic series. So it was a character she had already established, but some of those early drawings were no different than some of the ones that I actually modeled for, that it was just really hard to tell them apart.
What a strange coincidence, right? You know, yeah. Lucky for you, though. So you're a professional model?
Well, I am now.
Ah, there you go. What were you doing before this?
I was a Carpenters Union carpenter, you know, just, and always gravitated towards the entertainment world. Always found myself hanging out with people that were, you know, making it, doing it in the entertainment business. And it kind of came to me, you know. It wasn't something I went out looking for. It wasn't really an audition. It just happened.
Were you a Star Wars fan as a kid?
Absolutely. I still have everything. You know, I've got all the vintage stuff. You know, I always played with the toys. You know, you only got to go see the movie one time, and then you had to relive it through your action figures and your toys. And I always wanted to be running around in the Death Star. You know, I always wanted to be Luke or Han, you know, and now I get to represent a Jedi Knight. It was like you have a dream about something, and it turns out to be even more incredible than what you anticipated, you know.
Right on. And I've seen pictures of you on the web actually wearing the Quinlan Vos costume and wielding a lightsaber. That must be a thrill.
It's awesome, dude. It's really, really cool. And Jan handcrafted that and molded that to me. So it was, that was another really cool experience. You know, she's a true artist. I mean, with the craftsmanship, with the armor constructed for me. And I got to wear that at Star Wars Celebration 3. I just did Celebration LA with her.
Yeah, right.
And it was just, I love jumping into that, you know, get up. It's to get all quinned out, as I say. You know, I love when she puts the markings on me. You feel it. You change.
So Jan actually applies the makeup to your face and everything, huh?
Right, right. She does the tribals and the tattoos. Yeah, it's awesome.
Does she do hair?
No.
Nails?
No, I don't think so.
Pedicure?
I don't think so.
Bikini wax?
No.
Do you follow the expanded universe adventures of Quinlan Vos, like the comics and everything?
Oh, yeah. She sent me all the stuff. You know, she schooled me because she didn't want any fanboys hitting me with some information that I wasn't, you know, hip to.
Have you ever suggested any storylines to the folks at Dark Horse?
No, I stay out of that. I'll leave that for the professionals.
What do you think of the new Hasbro action figure of Quinlan Vos?
I got to meet those guys in L.A., and they're amazing. It was really, really cool. It was great to meet Daryl and his crew and the sculptors, and I just think they did a real great job of it, you know. I was really amazed. I could tell they used the cover of issue 77. Jan does a really good job with all of my reference, so they just grabbed up her reference and went with it, you know.
Did you pick up on the reference to Master Vos that Ewan McGregor made in the final Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith?
Oh, that was a great, sitting there in the theater, man. I felt like I had spiders in my hair, you know, it was real it was just amazing. I loved hearing that, especially, you know, hearing Ewan McGregor say it. It sounded so cool.
It really legitimized the character in the Star Wars universe, in my opinion.
Yeah, it galvanized him, I guess, and he's a made man. There was the people that don't read comic books. They just go by what the movies say, so now it bridged that gap, you know.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Boss Pity.
What's been the most positive experience for you since hooking up with the Star Wars universe?
Meeting all these people from around the world, and definitely it's the fans, or to meet the young kids and stuff, you know. It's totally amazing. It's all about the fans.
Now, the connection between the comics and the movies also, I'm sure you're aware, that in the comic adaptation of Revenge of the Sith, there's a panel that shows Quinlan Vos being wiped out in battle. How'd you feel when you saw that?
Pretty sick. I think it was Doug Wheatley that was busting my chops in San Diego Comic-Con. He said something about, I killed your character. And I looked at Jan and I said, what did he just say? And she's like, never mind, ignore him. You know, I guess he was pardoned, you know?
That's right. They did bring him back.
He survived an explosion. I guess he was pulled to safety by a young deviant Wookiee named Chak that you'll see in Legacy coming out. You know, Legacy is out.
Have you been reading Legacy?
Hasbro let the cat out of the bag. They approached me in L.A. and congratulated me. They said something about they're going to be making Legacy figures.
Yes.
And Antares Draco has, I've got a little something to do with that character as well.
Wow. Well, you're all over the place.
He's an Imperial Knight.
I got you. Wow, that's cool. I'm going to have to really take a closer look and check that out.
The comic book 2-packs will be out in 08 for Legacy, so it's really cool.
Your character, the Imperial Knight, will be included in that.
Antares Draco.
Do you know who he's going to be paired up with in the comic pack?
His really good friend is Ganner. His name is Ganner. He's an Imperial Knight as well. So,
yeah. Cool, that's fantastic. Any final thoughts on the 30th anniversary of Star Wars?
It's hard to believe that it's been 30 years. I know it's far from being over. The opening ceremony at Celebration LA was just, I had a big lump in my throat, man. That's all I could say. It was just really, I was moved by it.
I was there, and you can feel the vibe coming off the stage, that there was a real sense of unity and family with everyone up there. I could tell that everyone was legitimately enjoying each other's presence and enjoying being in the Star Wars universe together and sharing that moment. It seemed to be even that moment was more for y'all up on stage than it was for us out in the audience.
We were definitely eating our cake, having it and eating it too. It was awesome, man.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for your time. Continued success in the Star Wars universe, and we'll be looking for you on comic book pages everywhere.
Thanks a lot, man.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
We're here with a guy who was actually in Revenge of the Sith. What's your name?
Hi, Dean Mitchell.
And Dean, what's the character you played?
Cal Hymenucci.
For those of us not familiar with your character, you played a senator.
He's listed in the book, Trisha Biggar's book, Dressing a Galaxy, as Cal Hymenucci of the Galactic Senate.
And what scenes can we look for your character?
The scene I did was the UK unit in September, approximately 3 years ago, when they came over to Shepperton Studios. We shot a scene where Hayden Christensen comes out of his ship and he's running up the staircase to go to the opera to meet Palpatine. So it's a very quick scene in the film, but it was nice to get to work on the film eventually anyway.
Now, did you grow up a Star Wars fan?
Absolutely. When Star Wars first came out, my dad took me to see it, but he didn't really care about what time film started, so he just went when he was ready. And I remember when we got in the cinema, the film had already started, and it was the bit where 3PO was having his oil bath by Luke.
You know what? This is a sick story, and this has been documented. Before you go further, I have told this exact same story. I got to the theater 13 minutes late when 3PO was emerging from the oil bath. That is how I first experienced Star Wars. And I missed the Star Destroyer flying overhead at the beginning. I was getting trading cards with 3PO walking around that strange ship with the white corridors. The Jawas shooting R2, a mystery to me. Until I finally convinced my mom to get me to the film on time. As you're telling this story, I'm sitting there saying there's no way this guy's going to say he walked in as 3PO was emerging from the oil bath. And it was your dad who took you there late, right?
Yeah, my dad just didn't care about schedules, really. But in England, films were kind of on a rotation. In the 70s, you used to have like a mini movie, like a 20-minute film or a 40-minute film in between the main film. So basically, when Star Wars got to the end, Dad said, "Oh, don't worry, you know, we'll just watch the mini film and we'll stay in the cinema until it comes on again, and then we'll leave at the point where we came in," which is what we did.
That's unbelievable. When you started to tell that story, I mean, you're really one of the only people I know who can tell a story about going late like I did. And so right away, you know, I'm like, oh, this guy, he knows what I'm talking about here. But I said, there's no way he's going to say the C-3PO thing. And when you went there, I just darned my jaw just about hit the floor, man.
Yeah. Have a look at deanmitchell.net. And yeah, absolutely. You'll see that my story, the very same story, is already on there. So
that's unbelievable. I've told the story before on the Forcecast, so I can't believe that coincidence. Unreal. Now, how old were you on that first day you saw Star Wars?
I was born in 1970, so whenever it got to England, whether it was 77 or 78, because back then there wasn't a lot of, what would you say, multiple release or mutual release schedules. You know, we'd get them later than American releases, so it might have been 77, it might have been 78.
Right on. Now, let's talk about your experience out on the circuit signing autographs for fans and whatnot. You're obviously new to this, seeing that Revenge of the Sith is only 2 years old. What's it been like for you to go out and rub elbows with the hardcore fans?
Well, I think pretty much it's really surprised me. I never, ever wanted to come out and sign autographs because I never thought that the little bit that I did on the film was really worth people collecting autographs. But I used to get letters come in to my agent and people just saying, you know, when are we going to see you at a show, you know, and people sending in photos for me to sign. And it's like, well, I've got to do something, you know. I feel ridiculous, which is why I give a percentage of the money to cancer research, because I think, you know, at least, you know, coming here doing shows, it's worthwhile, you know, at least I'm contributing in some way.
Right on. And how can our listeners contribute to cancer research?
If you look at Cancer Research UK on the web, you know, obviously you'll be able to contact them if you want to contribute separately.
Thank you, brother. May the Force be with you.
Yeah, you too.
You know her as Jedi Master Luminara Unduli from Star Wars Episodes 2 and 3. She's the lovely and talented Mary Oyaya. She loves Star Wars fans, and she insisted to be interviewed for the Forcecast.
How did you get involved with Star Wars Episode 2? Did you go through an audition process?
Yes, I did. I was living in Australia, and I had an agent, and she told me Star Wars is in town. So I went for casting, and like, I really didn't know what was going on. I just knew it was for Star Wars. So I went there, and there was like so many applicants, people calling in and sending in their resume, their com cards, and I was like, whoa, wow. So they had actually narrowed us down to 5 different girls. Next thing I know, I am actually trying the costume fittings and everything, and that's when my agent told me I got the job. But actually, they'd been sending photos back and forth, and later on, the makeup artist, Leslie, she said, oh, when they saw my face, because they were actually looking for a look first, they said, well, we found her. Yep, that's it. And they stopped the casting, which was pretty interesting.
To prepare for your role, how long did it take you to get into costume?
I first had to get the contact lenses on. That would be like another 15 minutes. They're big, like extra big.
Then how uncomfortable were those?
Very. Like every time, like I had to have eye drops in because they would really dry out and start feeling a bit uncomfortable.
Wow.
That was not the best part of the costume, believe me.
She has blue eyes.
Yeah.
And you have beautiful brown eyes, obviously.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they're really nice, clear blue eyes. They're really, like, against the yellow face, it's so, you know, contrasting and everything. So it would take me about 2 hours to do the makeup, because they'd have to put the foundation, then spray it over and all that stuff, paint the tattoos and all that. Then I'd go to wardrobe. It would take another hour. So 2 hours makeup, 1 hour wardrobe, about three, four.
And so what do you think of Luminara's fashion choices? Is that how you would dress if you were a Jedi?
Well, I kind of think her robes are also kind of functional. I don't know, but maybe they are. They mean something. Like the belt means something. The tattoos mean something, and they still how good she is with the saber, her expertise and that kind of thing. So I reckon the headset and the whole garment means something.
Yes.
Means something. So yeah, I would dress like that.
You think that's cool. So how did you feel the first time you were in makeup and you had the costume on and you saw yourself in the mirror? How'd you feel?
It was interesting. I'd never done anything like that before. She was supposed to be a senator. Then they changed her into a Jedi Master. And I was finding the process rather interesting. It was really different because when I did it for episode 3, I knew I'd gone to conventions and I'd seen the fans. I knew what it meant. But when I was doing episode 2, I really didn't know how interesting it would be to be Luminara, you know. But when I wore the costume and did the makeup for episode 3, it's like I knew who she was and it felt so much better. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm back in Luminara's costume. So it was a different experience.
How exciting. Now, just to play a Jedi is really cool, but you actually got to use a lightsaber. Now, let's talk about that. Did you go through a bit of training? Do you have any fencing experience?
I have Chinese sword fighting experience, and on set, Nick would show us a bit of kendo, but he would also let you do your own style, because sometimes we'll just go off on a tangent. I have my own style. Nalini has hers, Orly has hers, Shakti's style was so, everyone was so different. Kit Fisto had his own. So they would tell us to just do what we were told and also do whatever we want to do.
Did you work directly with George Lucas?
Yes, I did. When we were doing the office scene, he was there and like offset, he's very friendly. We would chat about other things. Like since I'm from Kenya, he would tell me about how he went on safaris and what he did. And he's very friendly. He's fun.
What about working with blue screen technology? Is that kind of weird for you?
Yeah, it was really weird because some of the scenes we do and we'd be like, they'll tell us what to do and you kind of feel silly and you're like, why am I doing this? So when the movie came out, I was like, okay, so that makes sense now. But you kind of feel stupid. You're like, what am I doing?
So it must have been amazing for you to actually go see the movie, even though you were in it, to actually see the film for the first time and see the incredible environments and effects and everything that you were there, but you weren't there.
I know. It's so amazing. I thought I'd be there for, well, I didn't even think I'd be there for anyone would see me or just maybe 2 seconds or something. But it was really cool that they showed us in the office scene and I'm like, wow, I can't believe it.
And were you nervous that your scenes would end up getting cut?
Yeah, I guess every actor goes through that.
And were there scenes that you did shoot for the film that were not included in the final product?
For episode 2, no. For episode 3, I was there for like a much shorter time. Yeah, so.
But you did get a hangout on the Wookiee planet, which not many people can say.
I guess, yeah, that was fun.
Do you keep up with your character via the expanded universe, especially through the novel, The Approaching Storm?
Yes, I have that novel and I read it.
And do you find that fans might want to put you on the spot every once in a while and throw some trivia up at you that maybe you don't know the answer to?
Yeah, that happens. And it happened to us in Celebration 3. They had a trivia about Jedis. And we were like, me, Amy, and Orly, we were like, oh my gosh, these guys know more about the Jedi than we do. It was funny.
What is your relationship with Star Wars fans?
I love Star Wars fans. They're great. They're awesome. And I'm glad I got to meet them because they actually helped me to know more about the character and to like the character more. And actually, I don't know, I'm more of a Star Wars fan than I was because of the Star Wars fans. So, which is a good thing. I'm glad I get to meet all these fans.
And being a female character in the Star Wars universe, do you find that appeals to young girls?
Yes, it does, because they don't only play with Princess Leia anymore, so they can be different Jedi. They can be Shakti, they can be Luminara, they can be Barriss Offee, which is good.
How'd you enjoy Celebration 4 in L.A.?
I had lots of fun. Billy Dee wasn't doing any autographs, but I got to meet him and take photos. I had a fun time.
Did Billy Dee try working any of his magic on you? Obviously, you're very attractive. Come on, he's only human.
He's friendly. He's a friendly guy.
Are you friends with any of the actors or crew from Star Wars?
Yeah, I stay friends, of course, with Nalini, Padawan Nalini, Orly, Rey, Sam, Ahmed.
What is this I hear about you being a skilled belly dancer?
Oh, who told you that?
I do my research. I know what's going on.
Yeah, I like belly dancing. I love belly dancing. It's fun. I like to dance. No, I like to know different types of dances, belly dancing. If I have time, I'll do ballroom, belly dancing, or any other one. I like to... Some of the things I'd like to do, apart from the dancing, is skateboarding. I always watch the extreme sports. Skateboarding, learn some rollerblading, water ski, ride motorbikes. Yeah. I know, those extreme sports.
Yes.
I like extreme sports.
You're very active.
Yep.
The belly dancing Jedi has kind of a cool ring to it, huh?
Oh, there she goes.
Just to wrap things up, any final thoughts on the 30th anniversary of Star Wars?
I wish they had this huge, huge party like in L.A. Because I know George can make very great parties.
Yeah.
The Star Wars rap parties were always fun.
Really?
They were big and fun, and I enjoyed myself. And he'd be there mingling with everybody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was hoping they would have a big, big party somewhere. I don't know where.
Now, let's talk about Star Wars rap parties just for a second. Who's the life of the party at those get-togethers?
Oh, there were so many people. Ahmed Best is a good party guy.
Yeah.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Ahmed is good. I can't remember Sandy. No. Sandy Finlay was...
Sandy.
She's fun. And George is always a party guy. He's fun.
George Lucas is a party guy, huh?
Yeah, he was there having a great time.
All right.
Natalie was, she was having fun as well. We were all having, it was the best party I've been to. It was so much fun.
That was a rap party for which film?
That was for episode 2.
Okay.
I don't remember going for the one for episode 3 though. No, that was for episode 2. That was so much fun. And for all the wrestling fans out there, I'm a wrestling fan and I love John Cena.
Okay, there we go.
I'm glad he won. I'm glad he won the big American bash.
Fantastic. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are into that, too. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have loved the opportunity to go to that rap party. I mean, you really scored a ticket to quite the event, I'm sure.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with your continued success in Star Wars and anything else you're up to.
Oh, thanks. I always like doing interviews for Force.net. I love Force.net, and everyone who goes on Force.net, it rocks. It's the best. Keep going.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Our next stop was at the FederationToys.com booth, where Star Wars artist extraordinaire Dave Dorman was meeting his many fans.
How's it going, Dave?
Everything's going fine. I just got here myself, so I haven't had a chance to soak it all in yet. But we got 3 days of this to go, so I'm ready.
You need 3 days to get through an event like this, isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's large enough that, you know, maybe even 3 days isn't good enough to see everything.
So how was Celebration 4? How'd that treat you?
Celebration 4 was real good. It was a real big crowd. It was, good business as far as selling the prints go. My special print for the show sold out. And so I had, unfortunately, some unhappy fans coming later in the show looking for the print. But a lot of fans signing autographs and, shaking hands and meeting new people. And it was a real good show. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Well, there's no doubt that your booth was always hopping, always popular. People were gathered around the whole time. I couldn't get near it. I was walking around with issue number 1 of Dark Empire for the whole weekend. I couldn't even get near you.
Well, you know, that's one of the good things for me, and one of the sort of drawbacks of having a big show is that the crowds tend to be a little bit large, and I spend probably a little bit more time talking to the fans and signing and doing sketches rather than just saying hello and you know, move on to the next fan. So, you know, if everyone's patient, everyone will get a chance to say hi. And you know, that's what I'm there for, is really to meet the fans and say hi and enjoy the show.
Did you go out to Celebration Europe?
Yeah, I did do a Celebration Europe, and that was a little bit smaller show, but it was still a good crowd. And surprisingly, I found that there were more kids at Celebration Europe than in Celebration LA, which... sort of was weird. Maybe I just didn't see them because I was stuck at the booth in LA, whereas in Europe, because it was a bit smaller show and I got out from the booth a little bit more. But there were a lot of kids there, and that was really good to see because that's the next generation of Star Wars fans. And the show was real good. I was real happy to be out there and meet a lot of fans that I've only emailed over the years from Europe and England. So it was good to put some faces with the names.
So let's talk talk about Star Wars art. You got anything in the hopper right now?
Just to follow up from the summer, I did the two special edition prints, one for C4 in LA and one for Europe. They were two different prints, and both of those sold out. So that was real good for me and for Lucasfilm and for the fans who got a copy. I have been talking to Acme Novelty, who have the exclusive license now to do limited edition prints. And so we're in negotiations right now to go ahead and do a couple of more prints for next year. I can't really talk about them right now because there's no contract signed, but that'll be something I hope that the fans are looking forward to instead of having to wait for the next celebration to see some more of my artwork in large print form that Acme is going to work with me on that to get something out a little bit sooner. And then we're looking at a possible art book collection of sort of my whole career, which would include Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Aliens and Predator and, you know, all the other stuff that I've been involved with. So looking towards that maybe next year or the year after. I don't know how long it's going to take to put together, but that's a pretty exciting project for me, you know, having sort of an overview. I've been doing this for 20 years, so there's quite a lot of work out there. Some of the early stuff is a little bit interesting because, you know, I'm not quite the artist then that I am now. But, you know, it's something to look forward to. And other than that, I'm just still doing freelance stuff. So hopefully we'll see some Indiana Jones work to coincide for next year's film. You know, you never know what else is going to come down the road.
Right. I wanted to ask you about Indy because, of course, that's how Lucasfilm got turned on to you, was some work you were doing for Dark Horse and Indiana Jones. Any plans to hook up with Dark Horse, maybe do some more?
Dark Horse's door is always open. It's a matter of, you know, just me being in contact with the editors there and them being in contact with me. There's nothing confirmed yet. We're still a ways out from you know, getting books ready for next summer, but I have been in contact with a couple other licensees about doing some artwork, and we will see. I would be very confident in saying that you'll see some Indiana Jones Dave Dorman artwork out there of sometime next spring.
Wizard World 2007 successfully invaded Chicago last weekend, August 9th through the 12th, with its huge roster of the top comic talent in the world. Lucasfilm artist and newest honorary member of the 501st, Tom Hodges, was there, and he filled us in with information on the new top Star Wars sketch cards.
Tell me about this top set. Seems like everyone I talk to, they say they've done 200 cards for it. How many cards are going to be in this set?
I don't know, because, I mean, there's some people who... like Adam Hughes did like 50, and then, but then you have like Grant Gould, I think he did 500, and Katie Cook, I think, did 500. It's just, you know, and I think Cat Staggs did 300. It's just a random, you know, numbers. Like, you go to Star Wars sketchcards.com, which is a great website to be able to see some of the cards, and the guys who run it are do such a great job. That would be Keith, and then you have Chris, who runs the Scoundrel Forums, which are a lot of the sketch card artists, people who are fans of the sketch cards, can go and chat back and forth with a lot of their favorite artists.
Let's give our listeners a quick update on Midnight for Red 5 Comics.
Okay, Midnight number one, we debuted at Comic-Con. We brought 100 issues out. They were gone. They're sold, gone. We actually were supposed to have books here for the show, but it wound up not happening. The actual comic comes out in November, and it should be in the next issue of previews through Diamond Comic Distributors. You may want to keep an eye on my website or my blog just to double check and see what page it's on, where it's at. But so far, the early, you know, word from fans is that they kind of dig it. So I'm happy, Red 5's happy, and hopefully, you know, whoever picks it up will dig it.
Great, Tom. Well, thanks a lot for the update. I'm sure everyone's going to be looking forward to everything you got going on. You always are a busy man, and you make your fans happy.
Thanks for having me, and I want to let you know that pretty much at every show, I get numerous people who tell me, oh, I heard you on the Forcecast, and the fact of the matter is that you guys are great, and I love coming on the show, so anytime you guys need me, I'm here.
You're the best, Tom. Thanks.
Thank you.
For more information about the works of Tom Hodges, be sure to visit TomHodges.com. Tom is also working on a Force Unleashed web strip for StarWars.com, coming soon. From Artist Alley, we headed over to the sandtroopers.com bunker, where original Star Wars stormtrooper Anthony Forrest was hanging out. Anthony filled us in with info about his Star Wars experience and his scenes as Luke's friend Fixer, which ended up on the cutting room floor.
Let's just start from the beginning. How'd you get involved in a production of Star Wars?
I was working in London at that time. I had done a TV series with the BBC, Anne of Avonlea. My agent had got a call from Irene Lamb, who knew my work, and she was the casting director on Star Wars. And so the first meeting I actually had was with George Lucas in Soho Square, where the 20th Century Fox offices were. They were using that as a production base in London. That first meeting then went on to a second meeting and a third meeting, and we talked about various roles in that. And then the offer came through from the production team to my agent, offering me the role of the Fixer. And the Fixer, as you know, is a role that the scene with Biggs and Luke and Cammy, who is Koo Stark, who plays my girlfriend in that role. And so I was cast to go out to Tunisia and work on that. Then while in Tunisia, we were there. I was there a little early. There were scenes being shot prior to the Fixer scenes. And it was one day when I was at the hotel that Robert Watts came out to get me at the hotel, said, George, I'd like to see you on the set. And when I arrived at the set, George came up to me and had a script in his hand. And he said, would you do me a favor and play this scene with Alec Guinness, which is the role of the stormtrooper. He said, put the uniform on for me and play that scene. That'd be great. So I said, sure, I'll do that. No problem. So I got a chance to play the scene with Alec Guinness.
The infamous scene is, of course, these aren't the droids you're looking for scene, the Mos Eisley traffic stop. So how about some memories of working with Alec Guinness?
You know, it was when I arrived there, they'd already been set up getting ready to shoot that sequence. George had handed me the script. I was pretty much learning, looking over the lines as they were dressing me in costume. I had the opportunity, not only to work with Alec Guinness, also, we had a chance to chat in that. And he was, he's a very generous, kind man, wonderful to work with. And so we got to know each other a little bit. And then when I was back in London over the years, I'd be working at the BBC, or I did some stuff at Ealing Studios as well. And he was working there on other productions. And he would always come up to me and chat to me and, talk about Tunisia and that and our experience. And he was a true professional and made life very easy for me.
How about the atmosphere of working in Tunisia, the heat and everything, and you're wearing those plastic costumes, and also Fixer was wearing a leather jacket. I mean, really not the type of outfit I'd be wearing in that sort of heat. How do you survive?
There's a certain amount of coverage that's, that is necessary for the crew, and that umbrellas, things like that, or shaded if you can get it. I think it was about 82 degrees. Plenty of water around. It's warm. It's a dry heat, so there's no humidity to deal with. The crazy thing for me is the day before the stormtrooper scene was shot, I'd been out in the sun and I'd burnt my shoulders in the sun. So when I put the stormtrooper uniform on, I was feeling it.
I'll bet. How about taking direction from George Lucas? What was it like working with George?
Well, George is very easy to work with. Well, I mean, for me, it was very easy to work with because George will sit back and he'll see what you give him, right? George is a visionary. He has very clear vision of what he's looking for. And so, but also at the same time, he doesn't interfere with the opportunity for an actor to come, first of all, to see what you're doing, to see how it's working out. The scene will be set up and you kind of step in and do your thing. Obviously, if it's not working, then you can raise your performance, lower your performance, etc. You can adjust to that. But George sits back and he watches and he listens and he sees what's happening before he starts to get involved with it. That. And also, George is very, he's quiet. He's very reserved. I found it to be a very gentle process.
And when did you learn your scenes as Fixer had been cut from the film?
When I first saw the crew and cast screening in London at the Dominion Theater.
Did that upset you?
Well, I try to be realistic about these things. I've been working in a number of productions over the years. Before that, I'd been, in a number of films. And you realize that when you see the script at 142 pages, that's not all going to end up in the film. And so if I were to analyze it, I would say that, the decisions have to be made in the editing room. And it's not so much about people's performances or anything like that. It's really about the length of the production and what moves the story along. And I think where the decisions were made were to do with the fact that there's only so much you can have in, and the opening of the film where the Fixer scenes are, I think probably they also felt, it might be slowing down in terms of getting to the meat of the story. It's background story to a great extent of where Luke was coming from and to give a little more flavor to in terms of history and that to the characters. But at the same time, you want to kind of move the story along as fast as you can. even at 122 minutes, that's still long in many cases on a feature film.
So that's a very professional attitude to take, and one you probably have to take with any project you do as an actor.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you have to, you can't take it upon yourself to, you're not in that process. When I'm directing something myself, and now I edit film as well, that has taught me an enormous amount of the storytelling process and the fact that you've got to get into the story and you've got to move that story along and get to the heart of the story, because that's where, you've only got so much time with an audience, and therefore you want to maximize that time all, to the best ability you can.
Did the initial success of Star Wars surprise you?
To be honest with you, I always felt, a lot of people have said over the years, we didn't know what was going on, and that I had taken the opportunity to look at George's previous work, and I'd loved THX 1138. And so I was aware that there was a vision there. Even with American Graffiti, there was a vision, and I knew that American Graffiti was doing well. So I actually felt, this was something special, and I was really enjoying it. Also, at that age, I was pretty wild. There were stories about how wild I was, and I was wild, yes. But at the same time, I'd done my homework. I was seeing the adventure, having read the script and that. I was enjoying that part of it in the reading. I suppose you feel that something has a potential to be successful, but I think what is the big surprise is just how overwhelming something can become and how it grabbed the audience to such an extent that it just went right to the heart.
And at that time, when it took off, it was a huge pop culture phenomenon that really touched just about everyone, because no one had experienced something like that. Did you find yourself in a position where you were bragging to people that you were in the film, and maybe they didn't believe you because, let's face it, you were dressed as a stormtrooper?
Yeah, that was something I had not actually ridden that wave. It wasn't until when they were doing Celebration 4 and when the Academy was having a special screening for the 30th anniversary that people, that it started to come out. Also, there were some behind-the-scenes pictures of me without the helmet when we were rehearsing, and that kind of let out. So it was quite a long period before I kind of let the fans started to realize who was involved with it. And also, there had been people that had written to me over the years regarding the Fixer, because they were interested in the lost scenes, and they were, the fans had kind of wanted to know every piece of information they could surrounding it. So people, I'd occasionally respond to that, but I hadn't really gone out of my way because I was doing my own work at the same time. And you move on to new productions and that. The other thing I think that I always felt with the original Star Wars was the fact that it really felt like it was an independent film. It didn't feel like there were a lot of executives in that running around trying to get involved in it. You had a unit of people that were on the production, but at the same time, George was very much in command of the vision. And that's, I think, what makes great films is the fact that is when you have somebody at the helm of the film who is both involved in the writing and involved in the very, all of the aspects of it. I mean, George personally would go around and dirty down the stormtroopers scene. He didn't, wait for anybody else. He was seeing it. And that kind of vision is what ends up making great work, whether it's in writing or whether it's in film, anything in the creative arts, is where you have a visionary involved in it. You kind of, it's not stay out of the way, but let them do their job. Let them bring that vision to fruition.
That's awesome. Now, when did you finally get a chance to see the deleted scenes with Fixer?
That wasn't until years later when I believe it was The Insider had brought an article out, and then there was a private screening. Somebody had gone in and actually found out the archive material, and people had been so interested. I believe it was not until somebody had actually handed me something that had some scenes on it, which I believe it was a very rough copy on a CD.
So now they're up on YouTube and still waiting for the DVD release. Everyone wants the ultimate DVD release with all the deleted scenes included. But up till this point, we haven't heard anything. Have you heard anything?
There are a lot of rumors that float around. I've heard people talking about it. I don't think anything will be done with them until they're absolutely cleaned and there's color correction to do, probably, and audio sweetening to do. So not until all of those aspects are fine-tuned. I don't believe George had ever let it go out without that having been done. And I know people have kind of made mock versions of it, adding scenes into it and that, and had their own hand at it. But I think everything needs to be, again, matched to what is existing there, just to make it perfect, really.
And what are you up to now? You still acting?
Occasionally, more occasionally, I write a lot now. I'm working on a number of my own projects. I shot a feature film called Your Gun, Your Bullet, which I'm doing the music for. I studied composition in college, so I'm now scoring the music for myself. And I hope to, towards the end of 2007, actually have a print of that available for release. Over the years, I've written a lot of material. I have 3 novels that I've written. Gradually, I'm just kind of working those things through. And there is a project that I'm in discussion with Rutger Hauer on. And I've now also had an opportunity to meet with Richard Donner about it as well. Yeah.
Wow, big names for sure. How can Star Wars fans get a hold of you?
I have a website up now. It's www.anthonyforrest.com. And that really came about because of people wanting to contact me. So we thought it would be good to have a point of contact. And it's interesting because the site is very much revolves around Star Wars, because that's a lot of people's focus and they want to, you know, be able to talk about it. But I've had people contacting me about this films like The Spy Who Loved Me, or even a very small horror film that I did years and years ago called Killer's Moon. And for some people, it's kind of like a cult film that had been around. And so now they know how to contact me. It's quite interesting because they're asking me questions about all these different films.
Well, you certainly have been involved in, well, 2 of the biggest film franchises of all time, the James Bond and the Star Wars. But Star Wars is what we're talking about and why we appreciate you today. And just thanks for making contributions to what was the greatest movie of all time.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to, you know, to have a chance now to kind of interact with the fans and get out and get a whole feeling for their involvement and their commitment to it, because they, you know, like everything, you know, the fans are really have made it happen and sustain it. They really do.
Members of the 501st were patrolling the floors of Wizard World Chicago, and they had a sweet booth set up and maintained by 501st pioneer Michael Washko. Michael tells us how he got involved with the 501st.
I've always been a Star Wars fan. I've been interested in becoming a stormtrooper, wearing the armor, and I've always been looking to find out how to do it. I'd have to say the middle of 98, I actually finally found somebody that I can get an armor kit. I got the kit, put it together, joined up with Albin on his little detention block website. I think we had about 120 members at the time, and look at us now. You know, 2007, we have over 5,000 members around the world.
Unbelievable. And, I mean, does that growth just blow you away?
Never thought it would be anything like this. I mean, originally just started with a bunch of people just, we wanted to have some way to get together. Because one trooper walking through a con is kind of boring and doesn't really do anything. But you see 6, 10, 12 with Vader walking into a con, everybody stops. And it's fun. It's a great time.
Every head turns when that happens. What's the Midwest Garrison up to lately?
Lately, we do a lot of charity events that we try to raise some money for local charities. We try to raise some money for Make-A-Wish, Children's Cancer Foundations, Pediatric Cancer. We've done events at the local Ronald McDonald Children's Hospital over in Loyola Medical Center. We try to do everything we can, whatever we can, when we have time to do it. We just want to help out as any way we can.
Now, you as a trooper, what's your designation?
My trooper designation is TK-895.
And for you to walk into a hospital room and have a sick kid sitting there on the bed, just going through another monotonous day of living in a hospital, fighting with a disease, and here you guys come walking in. How do you feel when you see the expressions on the face and the excitement that you bring to these poor kids' lives?
Put it this way, for most of us, especially the characters with the full-face helmets, we're very glad we have them because we're crying like little babies inside them. It's a great feeling to see that smile on their face. You know, they've been sitting there going through chemotherapy. They've got IVs in every part of their body you can imagine. And it just, you see them laying there, and they're just completely down and out. We walk in the room, and here comes that little smile. We get over there, we start talking to them, and it turns into a day of fun. They want to play. They want to have a great time. And we always have people that donate toys. We bring toys with us, and the kid has something to keep after the visit that we'll keep reminding him of it and help him along in a really hard time.
That just must be so rewarding to you. It makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, it didn't start that way. It started as just a bunch of guys running around having fun, and it's turned into this, and it just It really does. It feels great. It feels great to help.
To be able to take a passion or a hobby and to turn it around into something so positive, it's incredible. I always commend you guys for that.
Hey, we're Star Wars fans just like all the rest of you. We're just going a little further, putting the costumes on. A lot of people go, hey, look at those freaks. But you know what? We don't care. It doesn't bother us at all. We enjoy what we're doing. We make kids smile.
Were you involved in the Rose Parade?
Yes, I was.
What was that like?
Unbelievable. Incredible. Stupendous. I mean, I could go on and on and on. It was just one of the most interesting and fantastic things that's happened. It was all done by surprise. We didn't know it was coming. We got a request from Lucasfilm for a bunch of videos of troopers marching. We didn't know what it was for. You know, we're thinking, okay, we're going to San Diego Comic-Con or something, and they want to make a presence. No clue ever that George wanted us in the Rose Bowl Parade.
And what kind of training did you guys go through?
4 days of hell. It was 4 days of training with a real drill instructor, a real military drill instructor, Colonel Toledo. And it was every day, 8 to 5, 8 to 4, just doing nothing but march, march, march. This is what you do. Raise your knees, and here's how you turn. Here's what you're going to do. Oh, yeah, the wheel turns on corners. Those are not fun. You don't want to see the scars and the marks.
Fantastic. Let's talk about 501st.com. What will people find if they go there?
They're going to find listings of all the detachments and squads all around the world, so they can find out who to talk to locally. They're going to find listings of every single member in the entire Legion. Everybody who's active, they can browse pictures and see how the costumes look. There's downloadable newsletters. But one of the nicest parts is that you can get to your individual local garrisons through there and go visit their websites also and see who's doing things around your local town, what events are coming up, what events they can come and visit and help out, especially with some of the charity events. Come by, you know, enter into a charity auction that we have and win a little something. We even have some people that give away stormtrooper visits and auction those off, and that's a lot of fun too.
Chris and Courtney Mott were at Wizard World 2007 to do a panel and press the flesh at their booth. We caught up with them at the end of the show to get an update on their documentary, The Force Among Us.
Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, Court.
Hello.
How's Wizard World 2007 treated you?
It's wonderful, but I'm also happy that it's over. I'm tired. Christian's tired, too.
How'd the panel go?
The panel was awesome. The panel was fun. It was cool because everybody in the room never heard about the movie. So it was worth being here for that. You know, we had to pay for a table and all that. But we reached out to a lot of new people, which was cool.
Which is great that the word is getting out about this flick. Now, what everyone's wondering is, when does the shipping begin?
Next week. We are shipping DVDs next week.
And that's the pre-order with the vials of sand and all that good stuff.
Yep. Anybody that's ordered or shipping the DVDs next week.
Yes, that is correct. You're hearing that from the horse's mouths right here.
Now, let's talk about the big red carpet premiere that's happening in a couple weeks out in Woodridge, Illinois.
We got Kyle Newman coming out all the way from California. He's going to be joining us. It was really cool to get his RSVP. We're going to have most of the cast and the crew there. It's going to be at the Hollywood Boulevard on August 30th. There's only 60 seats left, but you can RSVP if you're listening to this right now at redcarpet@theforceamongus.com, and we'll try to sneak you in.
I just highly encourage anybody that's already attending to drink and eat, please.
That's right. We want to make the folks at Hollywood Boulevard as happy as possible, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They've been really great to us, and it is a full menu. It's a Bruin view. I mean, you can't beat that venue. Sit down, have a beer with friends, have some food.
It's a venue that if you love film and you care about film, this is the only movie theater that is for film lovers, you know?
Yeah, right on. It's real comfortable with the leather recliners, the food, the waitress service, the bar. And what's really nice is how they've built up the Man's Chinese Theater motif. I mean, it really adds to the whole film-going experience.
It's one of the only theaters that we found through this process, too. There's not a lot of support for independent films, unless you're in a film festival. So unless you have a big studio backing, it's hard to get your picture shown. So DVDs, shipping out DVDs is the only way to do that, or theaters like Hollywood Boulevard, but they're few and far between.
The cool thing about the Hollywood Boulevard, too, is that they've done red carpet events. I know David Arquette was there a couple months. Love Her or Hate Her, Paris Hilton was even there. You know, so they've had celebrities there. They've rolled out the red carpet before. All the Star Wars actors were there when Episode 3 was released. Jeremy Bullock, Daniel Logan, Ray Park. So there's the reason why they gave us the theater was because they love Star Wars. And they gave us the room for a real nice deal. They just want a guarantee on the bar and food. So we're letting people come to the event for free. We just ask that they eat and drink and live happily ever after, so to speak.
Absolutely.
People better act now because tickets are going fast, right?
Tickets are going fast. Actually, there's about 300 pending reservations out there. So it's right now it's definitely on a first-come, first-served basis, you know?
Yeah, we had over 120 people within a couple days respond back. So there are over 200 invites that are out there, so limited.
Well, I'm looking forward to the event. I know some of my comrades from the Forcecast are planning on making the trip as well. So let's hope that they make it here safely, and we have a great time on August 30th, Thursday night at 6 o'clock, Hollywood Boulevard, Woodridge, Illinois. That's in the western suburbs of Chicago.
That's correct.
And for more information, where do people want to go?
Always, theforceamongus.com.
Well, thanks a lot for your time. Courtney, great seeing you as always.
Always. Thank you.
Chris, next time the hop juice is on me.
Hey, you know what? We got to get Court to do more interviews. What do you think? She doesn't do enough of these things.
Right, absolutely. You really class up the place, Court. Thank you.
Well, folks, that concludes the Forcecast coverage of Wizard World 2007. Thanks to Mario Yaya, Dean Mitchell, Anthony Forrest, Doug Wangler, Tom Hodges, Dave Dorman, Chris and Courtney Mocht, and Michael Washko from the 501st. Thank you, Jim from FederationToys.com, for his hospitality and generosity. Also, big thanks go out to Chris and the crew at SandTroopers.com. Be sure to check out my photos from the event at TheForce.net. And of course, thank you for joining us on the Forcecast Special Report from Wizard World 2007. For TheForce.net and RebelScum.com, I'm Jimmy Mack.
May the Force be with you, bro.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.